Be'ezus Hashem, we're now beginning Parshas Yisro, and actually today was Tu B'Shvat, which makes tonight Tes Zayin. It's the 16th day in Shvat of Tav Shin Pei, corresponding with the English calendar of February 10th, 2020.
It's the 17th.
February 10 is today.
No, yeah, but Tu B'Shvat.
And it's overnight.
Tu B'Shvat is the 15th.
February 11th.
So it's the 16th. Tonight would be the 16th of Shvat. If Tu B'Shvat.
Oh, it's Monday night. Sorry. Monday night. I thought it was Tuesday.
Yeah, okay.
I got confused.
So, right, okay. Yeah. So,
it's Tuesday today.
We're going to touch upon. Where the Torah is revealing to us in certain ways an attitude. How we are supposed to, an attitude to how we're supposed to look at ourselves, look at the role of the Jew, and how the Torah has all the information that one can possibly look for, and as an interesting sideline before I even start this parsha, Parshas Yisro. Is that we're all familiar with the corona disease. And somebody brought it to my wife's attention that it's an open Rashi. There's a Rashi, if you look in Parshas Bo, the week where the corona disease took place, page 350. The Pasuk talks about how you are not to be eating the Korban Pesach. Alright, let's look at the bottom of 350. It says, Al Teichlu Mimenu No, do not eat the Korban Pesach raw, Uvashel Mevushel Bamoyim, nor having eaten it boiled in water, Ki Imtsuli Eish, but only broiled in fire. Rosho al Ra'av Valkirbo. Its head, its legs, and its innards. If you look at Rashi, and you will see a very incredible insight.
On that Pasuk?
On Pasuk Tes. If you look in Pasuk Tes, it's four lines from the bottom on the left column. Rashi.
Al
Teichlu Mimenu Na. What does that mean? She Einoi Tzalui Kol Tzarachoi. That means if you don't eat it broiled enough, Koroi Na. That is called Na.
Oh my gosh.
Corona.
Corona.
Wow.
That
is what. And the interesting thing is, the Chinese are
because you don't eat what?
Are notorious for eating live animals,
yeah,
bugs,
fish,
they are notorious for things that are raw.
Not
they,
kosher.
Besides not kosher, but raw.
Right.
Yeah.
Not kosher.
And this pasuk, the corona disease, had come out in Parshas Bo. It says over here, Koro.
Yeah. Oh, now I see it. Okay.
Right. Yeah. If you eat it raw, yeah. Right, you are eating the Korban Pesach incorrectly. If it's not. So it's an interesting point where everything.
Incorrectly.
Everything in the Torah has a source.
Yeah. Unbelievable.
We have to recognize. We have to recognize that if we delve into the Torah properly, we will uncover its secrets, right? And that's something we should bear in mind.
Age code.
Right.
Aish has a program codes that are built into the
right.
That's it's a program.
Okay, I'm just letting you know that there
is. This is in Rashi, not in the.
All right.
Yeah, like the tower.
Somebody, I heard on a similar note. I didn't check it out, so I'm only repeating what I heard. That you write out the word Corona is gematria aver min hachai. Aver min hachai means eating limbs from living animals.
Wasn't that one of the seven mitzvahs of Noach? Not to.
Yeah.
So,
and look what's on the desk here.
Yeah.
There's nothing coincidence that we shall be talking
about. That's right. It's very interesting. That's a beautiful thing.
It could have been a Molson.
Right.
Right?
That's right. So we have the beer that you're drinking is called Corona. It's very interesting. No.
They've just brought it over to me.
It's not coincidental. It is not Shemayim just to.
That's because you're
emphasize.
That's not clearly
it's just to emphasize the fact that there is something to be said about that disease. But on a more somber note, we should feel bad that more than 1,000 people have so far died because of it, and there was way, way more claiming to be infected, and that's still...
The rabbis are stuck there.
Still, the bottom line is every person is created with Selim Aleichem.
Every city?
And we should feel bad.
Really?
Yeah. We should look at it, and no matter what they do wrong, is unfortunate. But...
More Jews are keeping kosher now because of this virus. How's that one?
Okay, that's a separate thing. But the point is, we should feel bad that there are people with the Tzelem Elohim are losing their lives, and we hope that it'll diminish and they'll have the disease under control.
I was just going to say that I went on the subway last week.
Yeah.
And there are a lot of Asians,
right.
And the number of masks that are on the subway.
Right.
I had to.
Well, it's a closed environment.
But one better. Scary.
One better. Pacific Mall. You know Pacific Mall.
Yeah, it's closed.
The parking lot is empty.
Really?
No, it's open, but
really,
it's empty. Usually, you can't find the parking spot.
I don't go to these.
Okay, I'm just bringing out a point because we're going to soon now delve into Torah and reveal some very interesting things on Parshas Yisro. Okay, so now that I have your attention, so let's begin the story of Parshas Yisro.
Okay.
Yisro, we know, is the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. Yisro.
He keeps reminding us.
Yisro was attracted to the desert, to go into the desert, to leave his palatial surroundings. He was a man with all the honors, and he didn't have to do this, but he left his environment to go ahead and be a Mekabel the Torah. There is very much discussion about when Yisro arrived. Did Yisro arrive before Kabbalah Satorah? Did Yisro arrive after Kabbalah Satorah? There is lots of discussion. Rashi, one of the commentaries, is dealing with this. When did Yisro arrive? Did he come before? Did he come before? Or did he come after Kabbalah Satorah? This is all, huh? So it's simple.
It says.
No, it doesn't say.
It seems so.
It seems so. From the beginning, it would seem.
After Yom Kippur, it says.
No.
That's what Rashi says.
Oh, Rashi says. Okay.
So I'm trying to say this is a
but
very.
But it makes sense. Otherwise, he would have been one of the guys that had to be killed.
No, of course it makes sense from one vantage point, right? From another vantage point, it would make sense it came before Kabbalah Satorah, because Rashi says, Vayishma Yisro, Yisro heard two great events. What did he hear? Kriyas Yamsuf and Melchemas Amalek. Okay. And Kabbalah Satorah he didn't hear. The world was shaking with Kabbalah Satorah. That he didn't hear.
He heard, but he was traveling towards there.
So, but it doesn't say that. So then, if he traveled, why didn't Rashi say so? Vayishma Yisro. What attracted him were two seemingly tangential things. It should have been Kabbalah Satorah itself. The answer is, according to one opinion, it didn't happen yet.
Because there was an explanation. I heard that this parsha is not chronological order.
For sure, Rashi says clearly it's not chronologically in order. But the parsha itself needs to be recognized that it's not an easy parsha to deal with. Let me just finish my discussion over here. We have over here now to defend the part that it was after Kabbalah Satorah, because then the Torah is telling us that he saw the Moshe Rabbeinu standing from morning till night answering questions, right? He was standing and answering questions, and he asked him, what are you doing, right?
That's why we know it's after.
Well, right.
Because he's answering questions.
What's going on here?
Because that means that he's answering the legality questions.
He wanted to know, and he says, "Oh, because Hashem commanded me, right?" As let me just read the words.
What picture?
This would be 396.
Yeah, we went back to look at his quotation.
Yeah, that's always confused.
It says over here by Sheni, Pasuk Yud Gimel. He was sitting, right, there was the next day, which was after Yom Kippur, and he was judging the Jewish people from morning until right. What's he doing? Father-in-law is speaking up. Makes no sense. What are you sitting yourself a whole day and everybody's standing? What do you say? Because now the people are come to go and see God. Then you have a matter to be resolved. And I'll judge between man and his fellow man. I will make known the laws of Hashem. This happened before Kabbalah Satorah, that he's telling Yisro that after he's sitting a whole day and everyone's standing a whole day, that he's telling it that I'm going to explain Hashem's Torah.
Maybe this is before.
It says after Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
It says saying Abraham.
Yom Kippur was said when he came down the second time with the Torah.
Okay. So it's a very, very complicated thing. But what's going to make it an interesting? I'm just giving you the picture. Right? So let's make it very simple. Yisro, if he came before Kabbalah Satorah, so he certainly was at Kabbalah Satorah.
Right.
Right? He's certainly right.
Because right after.
If he came after Kabbalah Satorah, but he heard about Kabbalah Satorah, if that's what happened, if he came after Kabbalah Satorah, again, there are two opinions.
Yeah. Is it better to be before?
At this point, then we have another intriguing question. If you look at the very end of the parsha, it says over here, "Vayishalach Moshe es choshno vayelach kol el arzo," page 400, pasuk chav zayin, and Moshe sent his father-in-law back to his land, vayelach kol el arzo. Okay, pasuk chav zayin. Chav Zayin, okay?
27.
Okay, so what happened over here? So even if he stayed for Kabbalah Satorah, right? Right? It seems that he left right away.
Why?
Huh?
Why?
Why? So the reason why was that he wanted to be Megayah. So good question. Rashi explains this. Right, he went back. Right, so Rashi says Legaya b'nei mishpachtai to be Megayah, to convert the people of his family. In other words, now that he was exposed to the Torah, he wants to make them into Jews. Megayah, as a tangential remark, this did not work for him. You cannot create a Jewish family in a vacuum. You need a community. You need people with you. There is no descendants that are Torah Jews.
He was a Midianite?
He's not a Midianite. He's from... He's from Midian, but he's not a tribe. He's not part of the Jewish people.
Midians can convert.
Huh?
They could convert?
They could if they wanted.
Anybody could.
Amon and Moab had that problem. Okay, now let's. I have a lot to say. I want to try to get to something very important. So here it says in the pasuk, "Vayishalach Moshe Eskayishnai ve'yerachol al-art." So he went to go be Megayer, his family. But their story does not. It seems to me right away. It seems that this was right away. If you look in Bamidbar, Perek Vav. Pasichovtes, Perek Vav. Let me turn the right page. So 762. The bottom of the page, I believe, let me see where I'm up to. Hold on, I want to be able to get the right place over here. One moment. Chovtes. One moment. I believe I was past the Perek Yud. I apologize. Perek Yud. Sometimes when I write my notes quickly, so now the Vav and the Yud are interchangeable. It looks like it's Perek Yud. I apologize. Perek Yud. Pasuk Chovtes. Okay.
Chavtes.
Okay. 784.
Oh, 784.
Okay. Now you can know he didn't leave right away. It's already now into the second year the Jewish people are in the Midbar. And now Hashem made the clouds of glory start to move, and Moshe is informing his father-in-law, we have to move. Please join us. Let's read on. Vayomer Moshe Lechovav ben Reuel HaMidyani. Right? He was from Midian. We mentioned
that. Is this the same person?
Yes. Chovav had seven names.
That's his real name, yeah.
Father-in-law.
He had seven names. Chovav was one of Yisro's seven names. HaMidyani, the Midianite. Chose Moshe, the father-in-law of Moshe. No simanachnu el amoka masha ama Hashem. We are now traveling to the place which Hashem has told us. Also, etein lechem, he's giving to you. Lecha, come. He's inviting Yisro, eaten with us. Ve'tavnu lach. And it'll be good for you. Ki Hashem diber tov al Yisrael. Because Hashem has said good things about the Jewish people. They're an Am Segula. They're a very special people. Eretz Yisrael is a special land. Come with us. Come. Vayomer Elov. And he responds. Yisrael responds. Lo Elech. I will not go. Ki Im El Arzi. I'm only going back to my land. Well, Moladiti Elech, and then to my birthplace I'm going to go. Moshe doesn't want to take a no for an answer. Al notazov, next pasuk. Do not forsake us. Al notazov osanu. Ki al ken yodata chanoseinu b'amin. You know our settlement, our staying in the desert. It was good, but yisalanu l'anayim, and you were first for eyes, meaning for a guide. You helped us. You were the one to introduce us the idea of you should have judges over 1,000 judges. Judges over 100, judges over 50, and judges over 10, so that the work shouldn't be insurmountable for me. And you were a help. Not only that, we added a passionate Torah because of you. You benefited from coming with us. Come with us.
That's an offer you can't refuse.
And yet,
Vahoya, let's Pasuk Lamed Beis. And you'll go with us. We'll be good. All right? The bottom line was, he did not go. And he went.
Where does it say that?
He
starts off the sentence like that.
He said, I will not go. He pleaded with him, and he did not agree. We know he did not agree. Now, question. In the first time, we learned over here that Moshe said, I want to raise a question. I want you to think about this, because it's going to be the crux of what I'm going to get to.
You can read in English.
Please give me your attention. The first pasuk, Vishalach Moshe es Choshno, and he sent him Vayelach el Arzo, right? Moshe sent him away, okay, right? Did he really, when he sent him away, was it Moshe sending him away because Moshe didn't want him there? Or really that Yisro really didn't want to stay? I'm raising a question.
Where did Moshe send them away?
Huh? It says, V'yishalach Moshe es Chosno. It says this on page 400 in Parshas Yisro.
He was begging him to stay.
And now, later on, he's begging him to stay. So what is really happening over here? All right? What is happening?
Where is Moshe's wife?
That is not actually part of our discussion. That was in the beginning of Parshas Yisro. He brought his family, but that's not in the central discussion that I want to spend time tonight on. I want to understand what was happening with Yisro. Did he leave because when he said Vayishalach Moshe es Chosno, he sent him away? Or do we have over here he begged him to stay? How would you explain this?
After he made up his mind, Moshe made him a send-off party.
He sent him away with supplies to be able to make her have a safe trip.
Yeah, but that's not the question.
But my question is, was there any emotional feeling over here that there was something in Yisro's refusal?
Oh, because of what Moshe said yourself?
Okay, so let me first explain that there was really, on the surface, there was definitely, he had a refusal because he was told he was not going to get a portion of Eretz Yisrael, because he wasn't part of the Jewish people proper, right? He can join them, and I guess he'll get part of somebody else's, or he would be a resident, but not someone who would get a portion. And he said, okay, I'm going to go back to my property and not have a piece of property. I have my own place. I'm going there.
Erev Rav got a portion. Everybody got a portion.
Whatever the Erev Rav would get, right?
He became part of the units.
He would get two, right? Yeah. Right. But it wasn't like he had a special nachala. Mm-hmm. You understand?
A special what?
A nachala, a portion. Yeah. That it wasn't a portion to him, right? So whatever. That, well taken. But he wasn't going to be that, okay, the one entitled to this piece of Eretz Yisrael. Right, something like, okay. So that would be on the surface over here. But there's something much deeper. And I want to read you a Yalkut Shimoni. It's brought down in the Sefer Mishnas Rebbe Aaron, Rebbe Aaron Kotler, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. Please listen out loud, and we'll try to develop this with as much time as we have here. And it says, a pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Yodea Moras Nafshei, Ubesimchasai Lo Yisarev Zor. A heart knows the bitterness of its soul, and in its rejoicing, a stranger will not mix and be part of. In other words, Medrash continues. What does that mean? Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Hashem had said, I'm just quoting right from the Medrash.
Right.
Bini, my son. Excuse me. Bini, nishtabdu betit uvelaveinim. My sons, my children have been enslaved with brick and mortar. V'yisro yoshev lo b'hasheket v'shalva, and Yisro sits in his palatial surroundings in peace and tranquility, ba'artzo in his land, uboli ros b'simchas hatova. He wants to go ahead and rejoice and celebrate in the simcha and the giving of the Torah. That won't happen. And because of that, Vayishlach Moshe es Choshna, as it says, he sent him. In other words, Yisro left for another reason.
Right.
He was incapable of joining with the Bnei Yisrael and rejoicing with the Simchas HaTorah because he didn't experience the shibud, the enslavement, the pain, the toil. He didn't wouldn't appreciate. Well, I'm going to develop that as soon as I can.
Humility,
humble. That has also
to
do with that, but he did not experience. Now the Jewish people who have toil and have suffered. And the words of Rav Aaron continues on. Vihine de Alkoch Shalko. He was sent because he had no business to stay there. The key of the loneliness Yasa Bukushe Hashiba b'Mitzrayim, since he was not in any way one who suffered the difficulties, the enslavement of the Egyptians, lo hayo yachol af zakos lekabolas haTorah. He didn't have the wherewithal to have the Simchas HaTorah. And I'm going to develop that in a moment. Yes?
My fundamental question had to do with where is it? Where Yitro comes,
yes,
because he saw,
yes,
he heard,
yes,
the splitting of the,
right,
sea,
right, right,
and all these amazing,
right,
wonders.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly.
So just before we read that there were those complainers,
right,
who had the bitter water.
Right, right.
They were complaining.
Exactly. So what?
So what I'm saying is, here you have those complainers.
Right.
Yet they should have realized all these majestic things, and they should have believed. They should have believed Emunah, that God would give them what they need. But they missed. They didn't.
It's after Matan Torah.
No. This happened before.
But I'm just saying, Yitro.
Bitter water. Oh yeah, it happened,
okay,
3 days
so,
after.
Okay, but it's after the plague.
So Yitro realized he was in awe. Well, I mean, incredible.
How he was a stranger in awe, and they didn't get the
message.
That's
my point.
And they didn't get the message.
That is my point.
Okay. That's an excellent question. Off the cuff, without looking into any mafarshim, they wore
looking to defame Moshe Rabbeinu from way back when, even before Dam
Tzvadeh. So Yitro was sent back because he was incapable, yet these guys that didn't believe...
But they still suffered. They were whipped. Okay. They were the supervisors, okay, under the taskmasters that were whipped. And that was perhaps their schus of going through the Kriyas Yamsuf. You can ask another question. Why did they merit going through the Kriyas Yamsuf if they were so antagonistic, so disrespectful for Moshe Rabbeinu, who is out to help them? The answer is they also suffered, and they were very, very difficult people to deal with. And as soon as they had a bone to pick with Moshe Rabbeinu, because they didn't understand Moshe Rabbeinu from way back when Moshe Rabbeinu complained to them, "Why, Russia, why are you hitting your friends?" That goes back a little.
Same two guys.
Why is they had a bone? They had a bone to pick way back then. So they had some personal negativity that surfaced. But I really want to get to a whole different subject, because it's really throwing me off topic. I want to focus on this particular point. I'm afraid I'm going to stop in a minute because it's already 9:01.
What is it?
And I want to get to it. I just want to continue and focusing on something to me very important. So what we see from over here, a very important aspect over here, that Torah, in order to be worthy of being a Sameach, in order to be able to rejoice with the Torah, to be Zocha, to Kabbalah HaTorah, there needs that feeling that you have to be Kona Torah with Yisurim, with pain. That's how the Jewish people, they came, they had lived through pain. He didn't live through any pain. Yisro was living it up. He wants to come in and live like the Jew in paradise without suffering the Jew. And now we'll quote some very famous Gemara. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai said, Gimel matanos tovos nasan HaKadosh Baruch Hu Yisrael. There are three matanos tovos, three beautiful, wonderful gifts that Hashem has given the Jewish people. The Kulan, and all of them, lo nitnan ela yidei surim, only through Yisurim, only with pain. What are the three gifts? Eluhain, these are they. Torah, learning Torah, the Eretz Yisrael, and the land of Israel, the Olam Haba. That's what it says. There are three things that come through pain. Learning Torah, Eretz Yisrael, and Olam Haba. Well, we're going to talk about Torah now, but we already know Eretz Yisrael is a lot of bloodshed to be able to keep the land. War after war after war, we know that the Jewish people have survived, but they had a fight to survive. Olam Haba, we know it doesn't come so easily. We have to pass away before we get to Olam Haba. We know it goes through pain. There is that transition period that goes through pain. But we're going to talk about Torah. V'amru ba'avos, and it says in Pirkei Avos, Kachi Daka Shel Torah. And I brought Sidurim here, but I want to just move on with what I have to say, because time is very limited. This is the way of Torah. And it might sound strange, but I will try to explain. Pas b'melech teichel. You eat pas with salt. U'mayim b'mesura tishta. And water with a measure. V'al ha'oretz tishan. And you should sleep on the ground. V'chayi tzar tichye. And you should live a life of tzar.
V'zuhim amido she'atorei niklas b'hem. And this is how you are kohen at Torah. Now, it doesn't really mean the only way you're going to kohen at Torah is only by sleeping on the floor. It doesn't mean if someone's whacking you with a whip. Doesn't mean that you have to go and measure every drop of water, so therefore you're waiting for the next drop to drip from wherever it's coming from. That's not what it means. It means to acquire Torah, you got to play down the physical pleasures. If you're going to play down the physical pleasures, then that's the only way. That's the only way you can truly be worthy of being kohen Torah. And then there are other things the Mishnah says. There's Mem Ches Devarim. There are 48 things, attributes that Torah is being kohen. One of it is b'miyot shina, with a diminished amount of sleep. B'miyat sicha, not talking too much. B'miyat tainuk, with a diminished amount of pleasure. B'miyat schok, with a minimal amount of laughter. B'miyat derech eretz, with a limited amount of relationship with one's wife. Uba kabbalas yisurin. What does this all say? This all says that if a person is fully, totally absorbed in gashmius, in pleasure, in having a good time, in wanting to have the most of the pleasurable moments of life, he cannot connect to the greatness and beauty of Torah. It's not going to work. It will not work. She'ein Adam, I will quote from the Mesilas Yesharim. She'ein Adam yochol lasik b'Torah, ki the boy, like he would like to, im einai perish me'anois ha'olam. If a person really wants to reach the highest level of learning, he has to move himself away in measure from the pleasures of this world. Now, it doesn't mean not to have pleasure, but it means to be diminished and not to be so. We live in a world that all the billboards scream pleasure. Make money, acquire acquisition, you'll have security, you'll have pleasure. This is what life is all about. No, life's about reaching your potential. Reaching your potential in Torah. The more you are engaged in physical pleasure, the more it's more difficult for you to feel the connection to the greatness of Torah. This is a matter of fact. It's a teva. It's a nature, right? Just like it's natural for your hand to get wet when you touch water, it's natural to burn yourself when you put it in fire. The nature of Torah is, the more you are involved in gashmius, in worldly matters, in that measure you will be detached from realizing the sweetness, the greatness, the awesome beauty and the holiness of Torah. It's all within measure. Now, I have experienced something last night. I just came back this morning from New York, or actually New Jersey. And I've experienced this picture. This is the CM Hashas, and you can look it on YouTube. I was there. I mean, this is actually a picture of another one. I was there. And I was there, and I have hit a note in my life that I've never hit before. I've seen Gedol Yisrael come from Israel. I've seen the excitement of the people who were dancing, who finished the Shas, not of the Siyam HaShas that we were accustomed to talking about, called Siyam HaShas in the city, but it was the Siyam HaShas of Dirshu, of learning the Gemara in depth. Learning the Gemara in depth. They finished the entire Shas, hundreds of them. And there were hundreds of thousands participating with them.
Not the Daf Yomi.
Huh?
Not the Daf.
This is Daf Yomi Dirshu, a different level of Daf Yomi. I have to tell you, in a large measure, I felt removed. You know why? Because I didn't do what they did. They put themselves through the mill. They toiled. There was a melus. There was.
So you felt like Israel?
I'm telling you how I felt. I was a participant from the outside.
Right.
But I enjoyed. I said to myself, and I said to my wife, I said, this is how it's going to look when the Mashiach comes and in the Beis HaMikdash. The music that they played there, I have never heard it in my life.
The dancing
and the music. They had a symphony. It was at least 25 people. 25. I mean, every instrument you can imagine. Yeah. This was professional on the highest level. You can look for it. You can hear it. You can hear it on YouTube. Yeah. If you can't understand the speeches that were in Yiddish, but the music you can see and hear.
It was all Yiddish?
Huh? Yeah.
Really?
90%.
Wow.
But I'm telling you, what's the bottom line? The bottom line is the more you put a melush, the more you put toil, the more you put your involvement into the learning Torah, right? The more you are connected to the Torah, and the less you have need for other distractions and other pleasures. And the more amelus, the more toil you put yourself into learning Torah, the more connected you are with greatness of Torah, gavus of Torah, kedushas of Torah, the sanctity of Torah. It's all connected. May you all be able to rise to that level, learn from Yisroel all about rising to the challenge, and me to Hashem, you all become one day very great Talmidei Chachamim. Have a great week. I wanted to add a few extra minutes to what I said tonight in order to make everything that was said about the discussion surrounding Mesiras Nefesh, learning Torah, crystal clear. I am a veteran Rebbe teaching 43 years of Bli Ayin Hara, and I have attended many professional development seminars. One particular seminar stands out very clearly that I share with my Talmidim, and I'd like to share this with you. In the seminar I spoke about growth mindset as opposed to fixed mindset, brings out a very powerful message in what I said this past evening in the shir. For a student to be able to grow properly, he has to have the attitude of having a growth mindset, a mindset to want to grow, to stretch himself a little bit, to extend himself a little bit. Sometimes he used the term to run the extra mile. A fixed mindset is a person who has resigned to the fact that he can only do so much, not interested in trying a little harder. He's not in the mood to stretch and to extend himself. And he's a person who rarely grows enough or at all. So when I talk to Talmidim, I try to tell them, we have to try to have a growth mindset. We have to grow. And using this term, I want to explain what I said tonight. We use some very, very extreme terms about learning Torah, which I'll mention quickly. Kachi Dako Shel Torah. I'm quoting the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos. Pas B'melech Tochel. The way of Torah is you eat just a piece of bread with salt. U'mayim B'mesorah Tishta. Drink a measured amount of water, not too much. V'al Ha'oretz Tishan. And sleep on the ground, and live a life of pain. Now, what is this all supposed to mean? Is this the way a person is going to be attracted to Torah? No, that's not what it means. It means to say that a person has to have a growth mindset. He should want to grow. And in growing, you have to leave some of your physical pleasures, your comfort zones, and things that keep you and anchor you to one level. In learning Torah, Torah comes with Mesiras Nefesh, with giving up one's pleasures, and the more a person is prepared to sacrifice his pleasures in that measure, that's how much Torah he could be kaina, that's how much Kedusha he could have in his learning, and that's how much Simcha he can have as growing in Torah Yerushalayim. So the Mishnah is talking about the nth degree, that if a person has risen to the level that he does not need all the physical pleasures that people like to live with all the creature comforts and all the different kinds of foods that satisfy him day in and day out, but he gets along with a little bit, and the less that he gets along with, the happier he is, because he is in the state of growth mindset. So when a person is in the state of growth mindset, the less he indulges in worldly pleasures, the more he is capable of learning and enhancing his life with Torah and Yerushalayim, with Simchas HaTorah and with Kedushas HaTorah. A very quick story, and with this I conclude. There was a great man in a previous generation who was known by Rabbi Levine. His name was known as the Tzaddik of Yerushalayim. And one of the stories I told over to my Talmidim, my students, is there was once when Rabbi Arya was already an elderly person, and he was spending every Friday night with Issa Zalman Meltzer, his Rosh Yeshiva. And they would reminisce from time to time about how the yeshiva days were. And one time, Avisha Zalman asked him, Rabbi Leib, where did you eat during the week? Because in those days, there was no cafeteria. They would eat in different people's homes. So Rabbi was taken by the question, but he tried to enumerate the people he ate by. I ate by this and this person on Shabbos, and this person on a Sunday, and this and this on a Tuesday, and so forth. So Rabbi Zalman says, okay, but there are 7 days a week. I only hear five. Rabbi Levine kept quiet. Rabbi Zalman said, no, where did he eat the other 2 days? And Rabbi Arya had no choice but to reveal, those 2 days I haven't eaten at all. But they were the best days of my learning. I learned with such geschmack, with such intention, with such kavana, with such understanding that I was satiated from the learning. That's so? You mean you didn't eat 2 days a week for 3 years? She said, don't worry, I was very satisfied with my days of learning. I can't go in further into the story because there's much to that story. But just to prove the point, the more a person detaches himself from the pleasures of this world, the more he's capable of learning Torah, understanding Torah, appreciating the beauty of Torah, and of course the holiness of Torah. Perhaps this can explain why Vayishlach Moshe es Choisnoi Vayelach Le'el Artso, he sent him home because he was not really capable of enjoying and appreciating the Simchas HaTorah. Have a wonderful evening.